We're here with Dottie Markham Barsta, once a former member of Sinn Féin and now the founder member of Éireadh. Dottie, how did you get involved with Sinn Féin?
Well, it came to Republican politics, generally speaking, I would suppose, from a number of directions, really. Certainly, I was influenced in a number of different ways. First of all, I went to a Gaelic school. The Gaelic school that were in existence in the early 70s had a very difficult time, shall we say. And just reminded of the fact that we're sort of backing on to Leinster House here. I remember as a child being outside Leinster House protesting for our rights as a school, looking for a school. We haven't got a school. Most of my primary school education was spent moving from one prefab in one school in Crumlin to another one in Temple Oak to another in Greenhills. The whole provision of education through the medium of Irish was something that was very, very, very limited. In fact, their school was branded a Provo school at the time. Special branch would tend to raid the houses of founder members and so on. As a young child, even, I just realised something in there wasn't right. In that regard, I mean, we had a lot of people who would have been artistic and politically active at the time who were very supportive of us. Christy Moore, the Furies, the Moving Hearts, people like that. So I was always surrounded as a kid with politics with a very small p that I wouldn't have been consciously aware of, but yet it was almost like a milieu that I grew up in. So it was the Irish, the Gaelic, again, with a very small p, learning about Irish history through the medium of Irish and that influence. But really, I suppose, in a conscious sense, my politics evolved and really evolved through music and reading books when I was a teenager. You know, I was very into punk music, for want of a better term, what was known as anarchist punk music, a lot of British influences, US, straight edge, hardcore and that type of stuff. I got involved in thinking about ideas and reading, and really from a very early age I've always felt that I was very influenced and motivated to resist what I saw was wrong in the world. So Republican politics, to my mind, seeing that a part of Ireland was occupied, again coming from an education that wouldn't have been very nationalistic or Republican, certainly wouldn't have been socialist, but I had a very deep understanding at an early age of a history of conflict in Ireland, and felt drawn to the most immediate way to respond to injustice as I saw it, which was the removal of British troops from Ireland and the establishment, or the re-establishment I should say, of an independent dispensation or a state of peace and a lack of conflict and so on. So that's my initial involvement was really from that perspective. But yeah, of course, as time went on, the earlier punk and radical sort of social libertarian, if I may say, influences sort of came back, and both of them tended to fuse with one another. The national, the resistance to occupation, the resistance to oppression, to the use of armed force against a people as a group based upon their nationality and in some respects their religion, although I never would have had any affinity with religion, blended with an understanding that really all of this was about power and about social power and how people lived and existed. So I was drawn to it, as opposed to in many respects. I've always felt I never had a choice but to get involved in politics, you know. And I've never had a choice but to be involved. I couldn't be the same person I am if I decided not to be involved in politics. I'd be a poorer person for it, and certainly a less content person. So I've always been motivated in that regard, and that's what led me to Republican politics, you know, in my late teens, and certainly all the rest of my life, all my adult years, have been involved in Republican politics.
So from there, what were your first actual experiences of encountering organised republicanism as a political movement then?
Well, it was an epiphany again, because before that, most of what I'd been involved in was in a personal sense, or again through music and almost like a scene, a cultural sort of scene and debating ideas. But it definitely was an epiphany for me, becoming involved with people who are deadly serious about politics, very organised, very capable, and I have to say I learned a huge amount about myself, about society, about the world, and you know, in a practical street sort of sense. put out a huge amount in terms of becoming educated. You know, I left school when I was 17. I wouldn't say no good in school. I always knew I had the intelligence, but I had no interest, no connection with the world of school. Even then, I knew it was almost that we were learning to labour, we were learning to become productive members of society, and the rebellious streak in me rejected that. But through Republican politics, I actually, you know, refound almost the necessity for an educated, organised body of people, you know, to resist what they saw as injustice and so on. So funny enough, in a practical sense, the effect that organised republicanism had on me, it motivated me to go back to college and to learn and to gain the skills that I need to be a contributor towards the objectives of that movement. Like I said, I met a huge amount of very, very, very good and capable people, and certainly had a formative influence on me. Of course, it threw up as many questions as I answered about politics, and in that organisation, as in any organisation, you will find a lot of different tendencies, political tendencies that made me think, you know, and again had an influence on my own development politically. But it was certainly becoming involved in that movement, which I'm no longer a member of, I wouldn't regret it for 1 second.
When it came to choose a political party to join, what did you choose Sinn Féin over, say, the RSP or RSF?
It's a very good question. The way I've always looked at it, or certainly a major factor in the way I've looked at political movements and organisations, revolves really around the capability of that organisation, the potential of it, the size of it, the type of people that make it up, you know, the ability of it to connect with other people, and the ability of it to move towards its objectives. At that time, that movement had what a lot of the other organisations didn't have.
What year was this for me that you joined this?
I was probably just hitting 18, just before me 18, barely, so 1993 or thereabouts, early 94. Choices, I'll be very honest with you, before I joined Sinn Féin, I remember distinctly going into the Republican Sinn Féin offices. I remember picking up a book of Pádraig Pearse's work, in particular The Murder Machine, that has had a huge influence on me ever since. Funnily enough, for those listening, The Murder Machine, most people think is about armed struggle. It's far from that. It's about education and bilingualism, and it's a very deeply revolutionary book. So I was looking around, if you want, for a home, a place that would accommodate what I saw as my politics at that time. And the IRSP, I would have known very little of. Ironically enough, a number of founding members of our school, the Provo School, as it was known, were in fact members of the IRSP. At the time, I wouldn't have had a deep understanding of that organisation. Subsequently, I had occasion to have contact with it. Certainly, I've studied the history of that organisation. For their own reasons, enough of their members over the years have highlighted the reasons, there were enough grounds not to get involved in a practical sense. Their history of divisions, splits, internal sectarianism, the lack of command and control and discipline and so on, I think has been enough to dissuade many people from getting involved in that organisation, with the greatest respect to them, because I have to say, theoretically speaking, their blend on paper of republicanism in the 1970s, to my mind, was the most approximating the views that I have and hold. The writings of Tal Power, of Seamus Costello, and people like that were deeply revolutionary and anti-sectarian and non-sectarian in their theory, but the practice of it was something very different. So at the time, I didn't really think about the RSP. With the benefit of hindsight, with the greatest respect to that organisation, I'm probably glad that I didn't get involved in that organisation.
Tell us a little bit about the inner workings of Sinn Féin and how democratic it is.
Well, now who do you answer that question?
Carefully.
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is I still have a lot of very good friends in that organisation. Let me just say that I have, and we in Airgy have, a different conception of what a democratic organisation should function like and look like. We have a different conception of what power in an organization should look like. In fact, their conception of what power in an organization should look like is everybody's conception of what power in society should look like and how it should function. Okay. So my experiences of democracy in Sinn Féin are probably a reflection of the type of democracy that is in existence in society, generally speaking. It's probably, I don't need to become very theoretical about it, but organisations who don't have a deep ideological understanding of power and democracy tend really to end up just reflecting the conceptions of democracy and power that are in existence. So, if I may answer it, I'll answer it in terms of Erdogan's perception and idea of democracy and power and the use of both in an organisation. From the very outset, and we're very influenced of course by our experiences in other organisations, Erdogan has been absolutely and utterly of a mind to make the organisation as democratic as is possible. And I'll just give you, I only need I think to give one example of that to prove the point. And of course nothing is perfect and we will have to modify and review things as we go along. We have what's known as an Ord Círchel, which in effect is the equivalent of a national conference. At the moment we have it once every month to reflect their size, but not only to reflect their size, to reflect the fact that everybody should be coming together as often as is possible. That mightn't be practical in the future, chances are it won't be for different reasons and we may have to look at that. But I'll just give you an example of how that functions. On questions of major strategic importance, decisions of major strategic importance, any one member of RDB who is entitled to attend and vote, any one member of RDB can put their hand up and object to any proposal that is of strategic significance and importance, a decision of strategic importance. Any one member can put their hand up and block that. In effect, every member has a veto. Now, that's not to say that every member has a permanent veto because the organisation will be crippled. However, trying to err on the side of democracy, we have factored that in, i.e. that no person will feel that somehow there were meetings beforehand or their voice isn't being taken into consideration. That one person can, in effect, have a veto on a decision, and that allows them the space then to try and convince people of the fallacy of what they have proposed and so on and so forth. So to my mind that is very significant. Even the name of the Círchel, and for those who aren't Gaelic or who don't speak Irish, the Círchel is a circle in effect, and even that word we tried to, you know, to it symbolises to us certainly inclusivity, lack of hierarchy and almost that all people are contained within it and all people are equal within it. It's also used in deference to the Fenian movement who used the word Círchel to describe their branches, and it's also importantly and significantly to us in deference to the Bolivarian movement and the Bolivarian circles in Venezuela and their practice of worker democracy, or at least their attempts and the movement in that direction of a deepened democracy and so on. So I hope that sort of answers the question. I'm again reluctant to comment on the democracy inherent in any other organisations, but let's just say we have a different understanding of democracy and power than probably that organisation that you mentioned, but I'm sure a number of other ones.
You said the other day during your talk which we attended that you had kind of doubts about Sinn Féin going back as far as 1994, and obviously this led ultimately 12 years later to you joining a separate group or helping to form a separate group. Can you give us an idea of kind of the timeline of how you felt about the specifics within that period?
Sure, again, in 12 years a lot happens and politics change and we develop hopefully and they evolve, but I certainly am on record amongst my comrades, present comrades and comrades past, that I had certainly deep reservations from my first involvement almost. That's not to say that other people didn't, and other people didn't see the fact that the road and the process that people had set out before them was going to be difficult. There wouldn't be one person of a Republican mind who wouldn't have acknowledged that. But I certainly did have, personally, very, very, very deep reservations to start. For the simple fact that the Republican movement, as it was embarking upon a very new strategy, okay, that hadn't been tried and tested before by that organisation, but yeah, had a huge amount of historical precedence of Republican organisations, militant Republican organisations, almost entering the enemy's arena, the enemy's territory, that of parliamentary politics, of power politics. And from the very start, I felt that was a hugely dangerous thing to do, for a number of reasons. I thought it was a very hugely dangerous thing to do, to jump from one tactic, that of, in effect, armed struggle, not armed struggle to the exclusion of politics, but primarily a strategy based upon armed force, to one based upon parliamentary politics and engagement. My, even at that point, and I was still a very young person, was very much of the opinion that we should have returned almost to the ground, returned almost to the community, to allow the space created by the cessation of armed operations, to allow that space to grow, for us to make connections with people on the ground, to build a movement that would help us meet our objectives peacefully, democratically. I found and I thought that that organisation was far too hasty and rushing headlong into an engagement with people who are past masters at deception, at neutralising resistance and almost accommodating people into the system. And some would beg to differ, but I do believe over a decade later that that serious deficiency has been proven. Has been proven to my mind that organisation now has been co-opted and adopted into the system, and there's very little to say to people in terms of how to overcome that system. Someone in the past, some would have used the term to destroy the system, but even to show how we can move in 2007 from a system of partition, neoliberalism, to one of a revolutionary socialism, that organisation has very little to say in that regard. Now, I would think in the intervening 12 years, the other possibility that I spoke about of building a big militant constituency on the ground for radical social transformation, if we had put our minds and our shoulders to the wheel in terms of building that, I would think we would have, as a Republican socialist left people, have found ourselves in a far stronger position than we do today.
Do you see history repeating itself, as in De Valera's Fianna Fáil turned into the Fianna Fáil of the day, and Adams Sinn Féin is going to eventually go down the road and turn into the Fianna Fáil in a couple of years?
Well, it certainly has been suggested, and again, I'm trying to speak fully and freely here. I would tend to think that that historical experience is in the process of recording again. And I don't mean that in the sense of throwing abuse at people, hurling abuse or allegations at people. But I do tend to see that that is what is happening. Why? Again, because all of those organisations historically have, I believe, failed to do what is necessary to bring about a total and revolutionary change in society, which is to almost forget about parliamentary politics until the point where you have sufficient forces, sufficient support, that when you enter those arenas that you actually can deliver upon your demands, as opposed to having to accept the demands of your enemy, who in effect have a superior.
Let me stop there.
Again, you just, I hope you're mindful of the fact that you have a radio
to them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think you have one radio. I may have to say that I can't answer offer, you know, for different reasons alone.
So you mentioned the armed struggle there. Do you think that, well, there's a future in Ireland for the tactic of armed struggle, or is it more or less over?
That's a very difficult question to answer, really, to ever be able to say that anything is possible or anything is impossible. Of course, depends upon the circumstances and the conditions that one finds oneself in at a particular time and place in history. Do I already have a position on armed struggle? We don't. do we have the intention of having a position on Irish Soil? We don't. I would think, and I suppose I can only respond to this in a personal capacity, because we don't have a position on it. My position at the moment, very, very, very seriously, is that the tactic of Irish Soil at the moment would be a very retrograde and reactionary tactic.
I can cut that, actually.
You can cut that off, okay. So that was, O'Reilly's position would be that the use of Armstrong at the moment would be ineffective as a tactic. Aside from other things, but the use of Armstrong was only ever, or could only ever have been a tactic. For some people it was elevated to the point of being a principle. To my mind, as someone who actively supported the use of armed struggle in the past, it was only ever a tactic. You use a tactic to move yourself towards your objectives, or you don't use it. For those who would use it out of a sense of anger, frustration, well, they would need to question why they would do either. Does it have a role to play in the future? Like I said, it depends upon the circumstances at the time. I would like to say, again, speaking in a personal capacity, is, or you don't have a position on it, we haven't had these discussions. I do believe whether one chooses to use it or not, whether it's appropriate or not, again, as a tactic, I do believe that people have the right to engage in armed struggle, to resist occupation, to resist oppression, to resist those who would use force of whatever kind against the people, not just military force. An occupying power would use political force, economic force against people. I do believe people have a right to do that, with the objective being to remove that, to remove the need ultimately for armed struggle.
So from there, how do you see the Republican movement? I guess it's obviously changing a lot at the moment. How do you see it moving forward in the 21st century?
Well, our position is very clear. Obviously, we're very influenced. The theory has been long established, but the practice, we're very influenced by, for want of a better term, what is known as the global justice movement, the Latin American current now. People are starting, in a peaceful way, where it is possible, and it seems to have been quite possible, although there is a question about how far one can resist capitalism before it, in effect, almost produces the need for some sort of conflict and ultimate conflict. That's a moot point. Our position will be very much that what is required in 21st century Ireland is that all of those people who speak of democracy, justice, freedom, social transformation, that those people need to seriously start to look at the building of a movement, to demand that as a movement, a coalition based upon cooperation, solidarity, joint actions, campaigning between communities, individuals, political parties, cultural organisations, and so on. Our vision of 21st century republicanism is literally to build a movement that demands that unapologetically, that demands that, whether it be Iraq, Palestine, or Ireland, or wherever else for that matter, that occupation, that imperialism, that colonialism is something from a bygone era. The 21st century demands a different way of living. We are certainly very much dedicated towards being a part of that movement.
So, as part of that then, practically in the last year we've seen, Irish Soil be involved in Chelsea, Independent Workers Union, and anti-war protests and stuff. So do you see that movement then as being the way forward then, the way Republicans should?
Absolutely. I mean, there was never a reason why Republicans, and again we would term ourselves as socialist Republicans, but certainly broadly speaking, that constituency that sees the ending of partition, the ending of the British occupation, and the creation of a socialist republic, there's no reason why that political current, there's no reason why they shouldn't have been involved in propagating that type of politics forever and a day. You know, the Republican movement, as it's known, the provisional Republican movement, for very justifiable reasons in some regards, got waylaid into very much a concentration on the national question. Is the way forward absolutely? Should Republicans have always been involved in it? Yes. Is there any other way to bring about the end of occupation and the establishment of the Socialist Republic? There is not. It has to happen based upon mass popular struggle and a popular demand from people on the ground in communities who aren't necessarily political, in inverted commas, and of course all of those other different groups and bodies and organisations and movements who say they are for the same thing. It can't happen any other way. The days of people believing that they are the vanguard of somehow a secret elite can do it above and over the heads of people is gone. I mean, it's certainly been proven not to be the case. In fact, it's debatable whether people should have ever entertained that type of idea. It certainly has been proven to be impossible to achieve, and will be so. It's probably a very dangerous thing for anyone to think that they have the answers, or that them as a smaller group have the ability to do for other people what they should be trying to do for themselves, which is to liberate themselves and their society.
Let's take a hypothetical situation, and there's a lot of different strands of socialism. So say after the revolution, how would Ivory like to see society organised?
Well, our simple position again is that Ireland being the fourth or fifth, depending upon what report you read and when you read it, the UN Human Development Report, for instance, has all of the resources necessary to take care of its material needs of every person in this country. Our position would be that people, generally speaking, have the natural intelligence ability to resolve their own problems. We all as individuals have. If we have the resources, if we have the time and the space, we are all intelligent enough to do it. Our position would be, first and foremost, from a Republican perspective, that people have the right to self-determination. People have the right to choose freely the type of society that they want. That's the Republican sort of plank. Free from external interference and impediments. The exact nature of a socialist society after the end of occupation is debatable, as you said. There are different points and so on and so forth. Our position, very, very, very simply, would be in terms of meeting human material needs, social needs, economic needs, the resources are there. The people themselves, amongst themselves, can decide what is in their best interest. Our position, very simply, will be again the people have a right to a job, a right to housing, a right to all of those things to make them materially and, in some would say, psychologically content.
How do you bring, or how does Ivory think you can bring a mass movement to bear, seeing as though nowadays people are mostly apolitical or they're not really into establishing a mass movement if you talk to an ordinary person on the street? How do Ivory think they could bring about a mass movement?
Well, again, we wouldn't certainly claim to have all of the answers. In fact, we've been very upfront in that regard. We are looking for all of those people who claim to be of a similar mind to come together with us and to talk and debate and flesh out these things. But it's quite self-evident that a huge amount of people, it's complex, but it's quite self-evident that a huge amount of people have no faith nor affinity nor interest in the political system. And why should they? Why should they? They see the political class as a different class, a different type of people. However, it's an interesting idea, and I do believe there's a lot of substance to it, that more and more people nowadays in the 21st century, for lots of different reasons, the advent of technology, the fact that the world is a smaller place, that there are far more ideas in circulation, and the fact that people, I suppose, have lived in this country, certainly have lived through a period of unprecedented economic growth, and yet they aren't content. And more and more and more people, I believe today, what scientific grounds have I got for saying this, I don't know, but I do get a general sense that in the world today now, people are far less content with accepting the answers they have been given heretofore. They're far more
liable to question things. They're far more liable to question the authority of people. And I think they're far more aware now of the fact that on the one hand they have all the access in the world to material goods, but yet every day it seems to be more difficult to actually attain those goods. For instance, use the example of housing. We are working harder nowadays, longer hours, we're earning more money in some regards, but yet the most basic needs that people have, the need for housing, the need for shelter, is something that most people will find a struggle to achieve at any point in their lives. The fact of where they live and how they pay for it is going to be something that under this system, the way we've chosen, or others maybe have chosen for us to live, that fact I think makes most people, most many other facts, question the very rationale and the logic for the system that they live in. Now it mightn't be in a very deeply politicised or intellectual or ideological way that they do question that. That fact, that example of housing, coupled with the fact that life, generally speaking, in a material sense, is very different. Never mind the effects spiritually, socially, on people. I think it certainly presents those who would seek to present an alternative. It certainly presents us with fertile ground. It certainly with people who are probably far more likely and liable to listen to you. Again, the relative rise in some areas of Dublin, for instance, at past elections would be an indication of that. People who have had absolutely no interest whatsoever in politics, ever, completely alienated and disillusioned from politics. The last general election and the one before it started in ever increasing numbers to start to vote for, in this case, Sinn Féin, who are offering them some alternative vision. Now, in their mind, that vision is far less than what it should be, and ultimately, we believe, far less capable of really addressing their concerns. But it shows how a radical message, a different message, a way of explaining the problems that people have, and very importantly, providing an alternative, is something that people will respond to. We certainly believe that there's every possibility that will happen. We certainly believe that there's a need for it to happen, and we are very, very, very committed to trying to make that happen. But yeah, there's no doubt about it, it is very difficult to turn people on to politics. And again, like I said earlier, there's probably very good reason for that. What I think we need to set about doing is to establish a different type of politics. In fact, a radically different type of politics. A radically different conception of a person's role in society, their rights, their entitlements in society, and maybe their purpose in society. So a radical transformation in what we even understand politics to be about, I think, is very important. You won't find it, I don't think, emanating from that building behind us in Esther House. I would be quite confident of that. A different conception of politics will only almost evolve and develop from the ground. And I think more and more people in these areas of need and disadvantage and so on are coming to realise that. Probably won't be next year or 5 years' time, but at some point I absolutely no doubt that there will be the development of a mass movement for radical social change in this country. The ultimate expression of that and what it actually looks like is for people to decide amongst themselves, but I have no doubt that it will happen.
One of the main things, Republicans, and not just Oireachtas, the Republican movement as it exists, broad spectrum obviously, the main thing they all hold in common is opposition to the military or imperialist occupation of the North, and they all call for an end to partition. But while there are sort of 1 million members of a Protestant community living up there who would be very sceptical about the intentions of Republicans, how can Republicans build, I guess, inroads into the Protestant community and work with them and work together for United Ireland?
It's a very difficult question, and it's a question that Republicans can't avoid, and it has been the difficult question for Republicans. I mean, I'm minded, well, history always has a lot to teach us in that regard, but just as you started to speak there, I'm reminded of the Republican Congress, the 1930s, for instance. Very much of that opinion, very much of a mind to reach out to on social issues and almost accentuating the socialist part of the socialist Republican idea to reach out to. I'm very minded of the fact that at Bowdenstown, I think in 1934, there was a delegation of Protestant Republicans from the Shankill who were on that march with him, and that these people who had very obviously very much seen what socialist republicanism meant to those people of the Republican Congress, Pat O'Donnell, people like that, and had taken upon themselves to become actively involved in it, were attacked by a conservative, I'm looking to use the term Republican, but a nationalist conservative element of the Republican tradition. And I'm very minded of those historical experiences where Protestants and people who traditionally would have come from a different community have been almost alienated from Republican politics. That's more to do with the practice of Republicanism than the philosophy of Republicanism. Again, we are talking about over 200 years ago, but the French Revolution and indeed the United Irishmen, in particular the United Irishmen, has been inspired the idea that people had a right to elect their own rulers. In fact, that people had a right to be their own rulers as opposed to kings and queens and divine right. Those people who propagated them ideas in Ireland, the original Republican ideas, were Protestants, were Presbyterians, all of the thinkers and activists, certainly of repute and fame in that movement at the time, Wolfe Tone, Jemmy Hope, the Shears brothers, Henry Joy McCracken, people like that, Mary Ann McCracken, all came from that tradition. That a tradition that traces itself back to the plantations and so on and so forth. So the Republican ideal, in a theoretical sense, has everything to say to people who would see themselves as Protestant. It has everything to say to people who would see themselves as Catholic. It appeals to the fact that people united together, working in the interests of all people, can resolve their problems. That people are better off working together as opposed from the perspective of a unionist or Protestant people, to serving the needs of an imperial power, which in effect uses them and has used them in Irish context as canon fodder, and so on and so forth. In terms of the practice of it today, how do Republicans move nearer to a point where they can embrace, in a real sense, Protestants, whatever about unionists? Again, unionism is a very different, and loyalism is a very different thing. Both of those interrelated political philosophies are ones, to my mind, that would seek to deny democracy, would seek to uphold the right of monarchy anywhere, but certainly in Ireland. They would have a very different conception of what politics is about. But there is a very important point, and I think it has been acknowledged by many people, certainly not all, but many people. And the last decade, almost decade and a half now, the space that has opened up, I think has certainly, for many people from the Protestant tradition, made them question where they're coming from, where they're going. It has certainly opened up the possibility for them that maybe their interests aren't best served as a minority in a so-called United Kingdom. Minority in a system that is based upon monarchy, based upon imperial conquest. I mean, even Iraq and Afghanistan, places like that. Going back to a previous point, more and more people in the world now are willing to question whose interests they serve. And I do believe that the space created by the cessation and the so-called peace process, for all its faults, one of the very important things is that it's opened up the space for people to question, because in a time of war, people will fall back on the lowest common denominator. In groups and out groups, there's us and them, there's us on this side of the peace wall, there's those of the other, and never the twain shall meet. So In terms of Oireachtas, again, as it stands, there, a limited contribution to the discussion and debate, although we are very confident the fact that we will have a lot to say and a lot to do in this regard. We would think that as time goes by and as we build wherever we can in conjunction with others, a movement based upon the demand for social change, radical social change, in reality, revolutionary social change, that people hopefully, and we will extend everything that we can in that regard to help them, this, that those Protestant people will see, hopefully come to see their interests are best served in a united, unified system, whatever form that takes, where people cooperate, as opposed to seeing their interests being served by an imperial power, that they are a minority in that system. I would think and hope that collectively our efforts could bring us to that point where unity is better than division, and that they could see some merit in that. I do believe that more and more people from the Protestant faith almost see that that's what is transpiring. But it's also obvious that the word republicanism has become tainted for Protestant people. Do you think RV's use of the word republican, because from listening to you there, RV obviously don't have a simple bricked out position, it's much wider than that, but do you think that when someone of a unionist background would look at Oireachtas and they see the word Republican, they're just going to think, oh, another dissident Republican group, and they're not going to delve deeper into what Oireachtas is all about?
Yeah.
Well, there's no doubt about that. That is a consequence of history. There's no doubt about that. It's very, very, very young. We're looking to sort of focus on Protestant. I mean, my mind, I was brought up in a Catholic tradition. I'm not a Catholic. I'm an atheist. I don't believe scientifically there's any basis for religious belief. But I have to say, I respect the person's right to believe whatever they do. But I'm very reluctant to engage in a debate based upon a Protestant people.
Mm.
Okay, we'll take for short, I know what you're referring to in terms of Protestant people and unionist people. A unionist person, when they hear the word Republican, for historical reasons, some of which are the fault of Republicans, but I think more of which are the fault of the ideology that they adhere to, unionism and loyalism. Yes, it is a fact that the word Republican would be anathema to them. Does that mean, I suppose, that somehow we have to come up with a new word that doesn't frighten people, or is it more about us trying to really get back to Wolf Town, get back to the idea of what republicanism is about? I would think that's the challenge for us, as opposed to trying to come up with a new word that doesn't frighten people in that regard. The original republican ideal is the ideal that I've always lived with. Again, I've just 2 minutes ago said that I don't believe in God. I don't believe that Protestantism and Catholicism have very much to say about how we live socially. People have a right to that. But Protestantism and Catholicism have been ways that rulers have used to divide people. The interests of a person in Ballymun or Ballymurphy or Ballysillan, a Belfast, a loyalist, a unionist, a republican, a nationalist, a working class Dublin estate, their interests are no different. All republicanism has ever had to say in that regard is that whether you're Protestant, whether you're Catholic, whether you're a dissenter, whether you believe in Allah, Buddha, or whoever, your interests are best served by uniting, agreeing to disagree about your interpretation of God, and focusing on what is important. And what is far more important, as far as we're concerned, is how people live. How people live is what is important, not the God they subscribe to, the version of some theology that they and religious philosophy that they subscribe to. That's not important to us. But I do accept your point. Republicanism as a word is something that makes unionists quite uncomfortable, or in some regards afraid, most unionists who hear of the advent of a group called RED, will they tend to think it's anything other than a dissident organisation? Probably not. The fact is, we're not a dissident organisation. The fact is, we're not an organisation that has anything to say about Protestantism, really. We certainly don't have a position on religion. We haven't a paper on religion. Like we said, I don't believe in any gods either way. And that's not supposed to be disrespectful to anyone. So, I mean, that unionists would have a problem with the word Republican is as much a reflection of their ideology as anything. Unionism is based upon the idea that they would like to remain unified with an imperial monarchist power. Republicanism is the antithesis of that. How we convince people that republicanism is superior political philosophy than unionism is a difficult thing to do. I certainly believe the message of republicanism, its socialist ultimate message, as opposed to whether you define yourself as Irish or British, the social content of that message is something I believe working class unionist people have far more to gain from, as I said earlier, than ever being attached to the United Kingdom as it's known, and monarchy as a very small 2% minority.
Well, this documentary is about the future of republicanism and Sinn Féin being the biggest Republican party. Do you think IRD is sort of a stopgap in trying to stop republicanism going all the way down the road into parliamentary politics and becoming a voice in the Dáil? Is IRD in there to try and tell people that come back to the basic republicanism?
No, I mean, some could say that maybe in truth there's an element of that, but no, I mean, IRD as a group, and again, it's limited historical significance at the moment. We'd be confident that will change, but as it stands at the moment, all IRD is about is actually trying to put into practice, theoretically and in practice, what we always as Republicans believed we were trying to achieve. It just so happens now that we have collectively come to a position where we no longer believe that certain other Republican organisations are likely and liable to achieve the objectives. We have decided to set about the creation of something new that hopefully will be somewhat more successful in achieving its objectives. So we want to define ourselves according to ourselves, as opposed to defining ourselves in comparison to other organisations. Other organisations will do what they will do. We will present ourselves to people, to the public, to the political constituency out there for what we are. We're a radical socialist Republican organisation that has a certain definite view of Ireland today, a view of the type of Ireland that is needed for the future, and we believe that we're being faithful to the socialist Republican philosophy in that regard, in terms of how we organise ourselves, in terms of how we want to work with other groups, and in terms of what we see a future society being. So I certainly wouldn't define ourselves in regard to what we're trying to stop other organisations become. We define ourselves in terms of what we're trying to become ourselves and what we hope to bring to bear in the future political situation and the type of future political scenario we want to create.
Okay, so what is the future of republicanism? In a broad, not just speaking of Ireland, but how do you see republicanism going in the next decade or so?
Well, again, it depends what you mean by republicanism. Certainly, the republicanism that we espouse, socialist republicanism, we believe is essential.
And it's grown as well.
It's grown, we do. We believe that as long as there's a partition of Ireland, as long as there is occupation, more importantly than that, as long as there is social division, social inequality, as long as we live in a neoliberal capitalist democracy, as long as that is a fact, there will be need for an alternative to it. Okay, Irish republicanism has a long, long, long history of resistance to occupation, resistance to social injustice, and so on and so forth. As long as both sides of that great injustice exist, there will be a need for a socialist republican alternative to it. We are very confident that, for our part, we are certainly going to work as hard as we can to bring about the establishment of a movement from the bottom up, based upon empowerment of the people and so on and so forth, that will be sufficiently strong to demand that our objectives are met. So we will be very confident of the future of republicanism, or socialist republicanism, in the 21st century. Certainly there is a need for it. As long as the objectives of socialist republicanism aren't met, there will be a need for that movement, and we will be very confident of the part that we will play in that.
Yeah, we could do it 10 times, so I'd probably not be happy with it, but it hits the sort of points.
We'll use bits and pieces, yeah.